Hey, Founder Fam, before we dive into another incredible conversation, I want to share something really special with you. Whether you're just joining us or you've been following us since the beginning, you've been a critical part of our community working to change entrepreneurial education. I started Founder almost a decade ago with the mission to provide entrepreneurs access to the world's greatest business leaders. Our goal was to break down barriers to entrepreneurial education, and that's taken us on a journey from Founder Magazine to this podcast and beyond. And today marks the next step in that journey, Founder Plus. I'm proud to introduce you to Founder Plus, which is an all-access pass to each of our online courses and programs and their proven frameworks for success. It puts every strategy we've compiled from world-class instructors at your fingertips while connecting you to a global network of like-minded entrepreneurs. Founder Plus will take your business to the next level for today and tomorrow. So whether you've just joined our family or you've watched us grow from humble beginnings, we're really thrilled to have you join us in this exciting new phase of making the Founder brand and this company the world's best entrepreneurial community to launch and grow your business. So finally, before we get into today's episode, I'm inviting you to come back, check out Founder Plus, and go to founder.com/membership. I'm really excited, guys. This is an incredible new evolution of entrepreneurial education, and our mission is really to get as many of these founders that we interview to teach and also give back on the Founder Plus platform and really go more in depth with the knowledge and the experiences and the lessons learned that they're sharing all in Founder Plus. So guys, please go check it out if you're enjoying these interviews. That's it from me. I hope you enjoy this episode. Now let's jump in. This is episode number 423 with Tony Jammu of the Founder Podcast.
What you need is thirst. You need to be a thirsty human
who is intent on learning.
It's a really fascinating exploration of human potential.
Now. The Founder Podcast. Even the greatest entrepreneurs had help. If you want to learn from the most successful founders on the planet, you are in the right place. Branson, Mark Cuban, Tony Robbins, Tim Ferriss, Arianna Huffington, Seth Godin, Steve Case, Gary Vee, Sophia Amoroso, Barbara Corcoran, Damon John. Learn from the greatest minds in business today with interviews hosted by Nathan Chan. This is not your average entrepreneur podcast. The Founder Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode. In January of 2020, today's guest started Oyster, a software company that helps make it possible for companies everywhere around the world to hire people anywhere. Today, Tony Jammu is here to tell us all about how he's raised $230 million in 2 years and what it's like taking and building such a rapidly growing startup, run an incredibly successful remote team, and so much more. Please welcome to the podcast, Tony Jammu. So the first question I ask everyone that comes on is, how did you get your job, aka how did you find yourself doing the work you're doing today?
The story starts back when I was born in Lebanon in 1980. I left this country when I was a teenager. I went to France, I did a computer science degree, and then I started my first startup 11 years ago that was an API business to build communication application. It went really well, went to 100 million of revenue, took it public in mid-2016, and then I left after a couple of years. And then I took some time off, and I wanted to really align what I do with what I believe in. And at Nexmo, that company, we hired people in 45 countries, and I was able to witness the power of distributed hiring. Not only you can access to the global talent pool and build diverse workforce, but you can also change people's life in many countries. You would be the best employer for Diego in Argentina and Mary in Athens and Muhammad in Morocco. So I wanted to replicate that at scale, and I couldn't find a solution for that. And the more I digged into that problem, the more I realized there is a huge opportunity to use software to make global hiring possible at scale. But this is where I said, why me? Why should I do it myself? It's when I realized that if you make global hiring as easy as local hiring, you can change the world. You can reduce brain drain we can reduce wealth inequalities. People like me who had to leave their home country for better economical opportunities don't have to anymore. They can decide to stay back home with their families, with their communities. Essentially, you can reduce brain drain and shift the economical concentration and distribute it around the world. And this is where I realized I have to do this. This is aligned with how I see the world. What a great opportunity to invest my skill set, which is building software companies, in the greater good of this world. That's how I end up doing what I do.
Amazing. And I'd love to go back in time, like take us a step further back. What did life look like for young Tony?
Well, my childhood was not all very rosy, because when I was growing up, it was a civil war. And I was born in the civil war, and I was 10 years old is when the civil war ended. And, you know, shortly after, I left my home country. But that taught me a few things. It taught me about resilience. It taught me about, you know, the world is a mess. It taught me about risk management. I've developed hyper vigilance towards risks in general. So that enables me to, as an entrepreneur, to identify a risk early on and do something about it. Most of the time they don't materialize, but at least I can predict them a bit or feel them more than others. So that's kind of what that period of my life brought to me today.
And when you were 17, you moved to Switzerland, is that correct?
To France.
Oh, sorry, to France and then further to Switzerland. I'd love to know kind of these experiences and how they shaped your views on business and, you know, you going on to then found Nexmo and other companies.
Yeah, my personal life and business life took me to live in many places. I lived in around 10 countries in North America and Europe and the Middle East. And what you realize is that this concept of nationality and border and cultural specificities are overrated in our world. Actually, there is so much less differences among us as humans than we are told, or as we think. And that's how the concept of Oyster is also about creating this company that has planetary diversity. So how can we create a company that is inclusive of everyone on the planet? Today, we are over 100 nationalities distributed in 70 countries. And we have gender equality in the business. You have 60% women in the company for a tech company that's unheard of. So we're really proud of the diversity that we've created at Oyster, but also excited about the experiment, this experiment of having an organization that have, from day one, people from everywhere coming and building it.
So what led you to the early steps starting Nexmo? I'd love to kind of follow your journey. How did you end up there?
Yeah, so I was, before moving to Switzerland and do some business studies, I started my career in the mobile messaging industry. Ooh. And essentially I was working for a mobile messaging provider that really started that industry. Let's say you're a bank and you want to send a one-time password to your users, or you're a social network and you want to send a notification. So at that company, they gave me a project called APIs. That was 15 years ago, right? So nobody knew what APIs were. And I took that project, I run with it, I develop it. Customer loved it. For some reason, this company decided that they don't want to pursue that project. And instead, I was preparing to go do my business studies. So I left this company. I went to do my business studies. And during that year in Switzerland, I had the opportunity to take that idea, that potential I found in this business where APIs, everybody wants APIs, but this company don't want to do APIs. So I took that insight and I looked at it through multiple lenses. I looked at it through marketing, finance, innovation, fundraising, go-to-market, and so on and so forth. And after, at the end of this year, I was ready. I was ready to start this business. When I got a job offer from a multinational corporation after my business school, I had to decline it, and I had to pursue that high risk path. And it turned out really well because the, like, if you think about the early angel investor investing in the company, they did 200 times an investment in 5 years. So we did a good return on investment with that opportunity.
Mm. So what were the challenges that you faced in the early days with Nexmo?
So actually the first challenge was about fundraising because I was a first time founder, and I found this guy, angel investor in Morocco, who haven't done any investment yet. And he said, I'm going to invest in whatever you do. So this is why I decided that, you know, I should not take this corporate, well-paid corporate job, because, you know, he wanted to invest in me. So I went to Morocco, and I spent a few months trying to work with him to get the funding closed. And we're talking about 200,000 euro, right? I mean, Oyster, my current company, raised 230 million approximately in 2 years. And here we're talking about 200,000 euro investment. So it took months to really put together the paperwork, get him to convince to invest. And so when he said yes, I wanted to invest, I packed my suitcase from Casablanca, went back to London, hired an architect, and started developing the technology. But the money did not came. So I called the guy, I said, hey, what's going on? You know, why the money, why didn't send me the money? And he said, sorry, the deal is off. I did not foresee there's this withholding tax in Morocco that makes it more expensive for me to send you the money. So I'm not going to send you the money. Say, well, you know, wait a second. I just hired an architect. He's costing me all my savings, you know. I cannot not pay him. So the deal is not off. I'm going to come to Casablanca and take the money in cash. So I booked 10 flights to Casablanca. Every flight I took 20,000 euro, which is a legal maximum you can bring with you in cash. Came back to London, paid the Paul, my architect. And this is how the business started. And this guy did 200x. Right, he did 200x on his investment. So that was a first challenge, and the other challenge was really taking the company public by merging with a public company. That's a, you know, challenge for anybody. It is difficult to merge and go public at the same time.
And you said you had staff in 50 different countries. Is that right?
70.
What was it like to run a company of that scale, truly remote, even communication? How did that work? Did you guys have head offices?
It's a thrilling experience, to be honest, because not only I'm building a higher growth tech company, but also we are changing what it means to work. How can we make work for humans? And what we realize is that humans want flexibility. They want to work when they want to work. They want freedom. They want to live where they want to live. And they want to be enabled and empowered to be successful. And we've designed an organization that provides exactly that. So how do we do that? First, we have a way of collaboration and communication that we call Follow the Sun, that is essentially enable us to work across time zones and geographies. It's based on asynchronous way of communication and collaboration, and we train everybody on it. We open sources. It's actually online. It's available on oysterhr.com/academy. You can train yourself to be a better remote worker. You can bring that into your organization and train your staff. So we've done that. So we kind of really build a way of communication and collaboration, but it's also, we did it in a way to fit within our culture and our values. So our values are specifically designed to help us succeed as a distributed company. So they are building trust, because it's really harder to build trust without seeing people. So we make it part of your job to build trust on a day-to-day. Secondly, is about elevating talent as we hire increasingly talent that don't have access to the opportunity in the technology space, so essentially elevating them from countries that don't access that opportunity. We wanna focus on training and empowerment and enablement and opportunity, so we can elevate that talent into the technology sector. And third is about thriving together. So these are the foundation of our organization. And I will have to say the last building block of this culture is really, how do we measure results and outcomes? Because at a distributed company, you don't see people in the office, so you cannot really measure performance other than having a clear way to set clear goals and expectation and measure that on a regular basis from the company level to the individual level. So we spend a lot of efforts to clarify and define our objective key result process that is more mature than our size. That's how we do it. And it's exciting.
Yeah, wow. This is interesting because for us at Founder, we have, not 70 countries, but I'd say at least 15 people working in at least 15 different countries all around the world. And it does come with its challenges, to be honest with you, Tony. Like, you talk about trust, you talk about even speed. Like, nothing beats, like, so we have a HQ here in Melbourne, which is where I'm talking to you at, and like, even when we bring people down for just like that, you know, month, like, we can move so much faster depending on that person's role. Like, how do you get around that?
Yeah. So moving into a distributed way of working actually exposes your weaknesses as an organization and give you the opportunity to address them heads on. So for instance, a company that say, well, we end up having silos. Well, who doesn't have silos in the organization, right? So essentially this exposes the light on areas of your business that you need to improve. So you need to improve cross-functional collaboration, or it is harder to build connection and relationship in a distributed environment. So that push you to make it part of your job, to build connection, to build trust in the business. It's harder to measure results. So you put in place an OKR process that makes people successful no matter where they are. It's hard to work together across time zone. Then you build a program to enable people to collaborate effectively. And just to give you some data points, we've grown 20x last year. And we're talking about speed. You know, this is like hyper growth. You know, Google maybe moved from, you know, zero to double digit ARR in the first year of operation. We did that too, right? So talk about speed, talk about engagement. We are top 2% of all VC-backed companies in terms of employee engagement.
Yeah, wow.
And I haven't met 90% of the people that works in this company. So in person. So essentially it's going on that path to become distributed organization, show you the weaknesses of your organization so you can fix them and emerge as a stronger company. Any company needs that. Any company needs a better way to build trust. Any company needs a more defined way of working together. Any company needs a clear way of setting goals and expectation. This is what makes you stronger.
Mm, interesting, fascinating. So you scaled Nexmo actually quite fast as well. You know, in 5 years, you're a 9-figure-a-year business in terms of annual revenues. What were the other key leverage points that helped you kind of achieve that kind of hyper growth? We've talked about this interesting concept of truly remote, you know, and your values, how your operational rhythms, but what else could you share?
Timing is really important. So you really want to time your venture at the right time. In the case of Nexmo, it was API. So we launched this API platform that enabled developers to send and receive text messages. At the beginning, it was only text messages. And it was the timing where you had all these over-the-top messaging chat come on board, whether it's LINE in Japan, WhatsApp, WeChat in China, and Viber, and so on and so forth. And these were applications that grew really fast, and they needed one API to reach the whole world. They didn't want to go and do country by country or integration with every telecom provider. So the timing was perfect. We were there for them, and they were looking for us, and they had a lot of money to spend on these things. And that have turbocharged the company in the second year from, let's say, pretty much 1 million to 20 million of revenue in 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And that enabled us to raise money, that enabled us to diversify our messaging to other channels. We had voice communication, we had video communication, and so on and so forth. And then it became platform. And then here we are reaching 100 million and then going public. So there's events in the company's history that are really pivotal. And that was the moment for Next Moment. And the moment for Oyster, January 2020, we started the business. The pandemic happened right after that. And then the remote work becomes a thing that everybody does. So that enabled companies to start thinking, hey, now I don't have to hire in cities where I have offices. I have the world as my oyster when I'm looking for talent. So again, timing is really important in positioning your technology into the market. And without that, it's a struggle.
Hey guys, I hope you're enjoying this episode and learning a ton. As you know, in this series, we interview some of the greatest founders of our generation to find out how they did it. However, if you're thinking of starting your own business and you want to hear from some incredible stories from everyday people like you or I who are actually in the trenches, only been building their business for maybe 1 year or 2 years, like that are building right now and they're really in the early stages, but they're getting success, you should come and check out our new podcast, From Zero to Founder, hosted by our community manager, Molly Flynn. These are in the trenches stories from our very own successful students that have gone through some of our programs. People just like you who are deep within the process of building their very own successful business. These are the founders of tomorrow. You can find the From Zero to Founder podcast on all platforms. And remember, it's founder without the E. All right, now let's jump in the show. When you talk about like team members, asynchronous communication, like you could have multiple team members on both sides of the world that it's actually literally impossible to speak or get everyone in at the same time. What would you do there?
Yeah, so we have a good example of that. We have our chief workplace officer in Austin, and then we have one of his team member in Australia, which is exactly, you know, the opposite time zone. So first, we invest a lot in internal documentation so that we enable people to access information no matter what time zone they're in, so they can do their job. So each of the jobs that we have can do their job independently through accessing information. Specifically, the more you go down in the organization, the more you go up in the organization, it's harder because tasks are less defined and there's more complexities involved and less structure. So the more you go down in the organization, the more you can create an operating system for them to operate without the need of talking to somebody live in person. Then you also have, we use a lot of recording. So we record Zoom videos or Zoom calls and people can watch them when they want. Like for instance, today we have our executive team meeting at 6 p.m. my time here in Cyprus. This morning, I'm going to spend a couple of hours watching videos of all the business updates of all of my team before I go into that meeting. So I know everything that's happening in the business by watching these videos. I watch it, you know, from sales, marketing, product, finance, engineering, operation, the people function. So all of the teams send me a Loom video with a reporting on what happened in that week. And then everybody accesses the same information. So everybody is on the same page before we enter the executive team meeting. And the executive team meeting also has a synchronous aspect of it. So there's also maybe a Loom to watch. There's a document to read. So you come to the meeting already prepared and meeting becomes much more effective. Now I have to say that there's still a need to meet in person. The difference for me is in-person meeting gets you to turbocharge the trust that you have with people, because there's a lot of emotional signaling that cannot pass through the video camera. So these body language, there's even at the hormonal level, you can actually connect body to body when you are in the same place. So for me, you have to meet in person Every company will decide, or every team will decide how frequent that is required. In my team, it's every 4 or 5 months. We meet one time in person. And one of my team members told me a sentence the other day that resonated well with me, why these physical meetings are important, is that she told me that before meeting in person, she knew that she could trust the team. And after meeting in person, now she feels that she can trust the team. So it's really the difference between knowing and feeling. So that's why it's important from time to time to add some in-person connection and bonding among the team.
You talked about an internal documentation and getting that, like your OS, you know, your wiki, internal wiki, like really next level. What tool do you guys use? Notion, Guru, Confluence? What's your one of choice?
So for our internal documentation, Notion is the go-to place. So for long-term documentation, if it's for short-term collaboration, we use Google Docs for that. Yep. And then if it needs to live beyond that, then it goes into Notion. And we also use Asana for project management. We use Slack for asynchronous messaging. We use Zoom for synchronous video. We use Loom for asynchronous video. And we use Pando, which is an employee feedback platform where we give continuous feedback to each other. We have an app called Kona that goes into your Slack and asks everyone every day how they are feeling. And then you start gathering sentiment, because also part of the question is, how do you manage a distributed organization? Is you're not, there's no office, so you're not seeing people, you're not having these conversation on the water cooler, near the water cooler, right? So you're not, you don't have physical sense of how people are feeling. You know, you can sometimes you go into an office and you get a vibe, right, of you know, what's going on here, you know. So how do you replace that? We have an app called Kona that measures sentiment every day. Everyone can say how they feel, and we aggregate that across the company, and we see how it's trending. For instance, when the war in the Ukraine war broke, we saw a dip, and then came back. Now we are going into a turbulent financial phase of the history of the financial market. We also have that dip as well. There's a high level of uncertainty. So we use also engagement tools. So we measure engagement on a quarterly basis with our team. This is some of the, we call them the tools and the rules of how we operate.
Oh, awesome. Thank you. Look, it's just interesting to hear, because you guys are, you know, scaling really fast. It's always interesting to hear what kind of tools and what your stack looks like. It's actually not too dissimilar to us. We don't use Notion though. We use Guru. Get Guru.
I've heard about Guru. Yeah. It's actually one of the portfolio companies of one of my investors, Emergence Capital. So we're them up.
Oh, there you go. So I'd love to talk about Oyster a bit more. You talked about this idea of finding talent and really opening up the world to global talent. How are you guys sourcing? Like, how many people within Oyster? Like, how many different countries do you have people within Oyster?
Yeah, so we have hired people in over 70 countries.
Yep.
And what really has been amazing for our talent acquisition strategy was the amount of inbound candidates that we receive, We receive 13,000 job applications a month. People want freedom. They want flexibility. They want to work for a company that gives them the opportunity to be successful. We have built an employee brand, an employee value proposition that resonates with what people want.
Yeah, wow. So you guys can't even get through that. Like, how do you even...
We have technology. We have technology that we use to look at... To kind of surface the one we want, and actually the rest we help them because we cannot hire 30,000 months. I mean, like, nobody really can, but would love to hire them. But essentially, many of them that don't get hired, they We recommend them to go to the Oyster Academy to get trained. We help them to know where to apply for a remote work job, because we're not the only distributed company in the world, right? So there are others. So we help these job seekers who are looking for freedom and flexibility to find what they're looking for.
Yeah, wow, that's crazy. I'd love to delve a bit deeper, like on the employee brand and how you guys have built up this insane talent waitlist. Can you give us more insights there?
What is unique about Oyster is that we need to be the gold standard of distributed work for us to be credible to sell into HR innovators. So this is similar to the Salesforce.com strategy. They had to be the best in B2B sales in order for them to be credible to sell you the best CRM software. This is the same as HubSpot. You had to be the best at inbound marketing yourself to be able to sell you the best inbound marketing platform. So at Oyster, we have to be the best at being distributed, human-centric, diverse, and mission-driven so that we can be credible to sell to these HR innovators. So we open source a lot about the things we do and how we do them and why we do them. And people listen, people see that, and they realize that this is what they want to do in their life. They want to find a job that enable them to be to have meaning, enable them to have flexibility and freedom, and also enable them to be successful no matter what they are. Not because you want to live in Cyprus, which is where I live, small Mediterranean island here, that you have to sacrifice your career to be successful. You know, if you want to go pick up your child at 2 p.m. from the school every day, it doesn't mean that you have to sacrifice your career. If you want to go back to your home country and be close to your family and your community, if you want to go live in the mountains alone, as long as there's internet connection, then you can do that. So essentially, we are on really an unprecedented opportunity in the history of work. You know, we're going to have 1.5 billion knowledge workers coming into the workforce in the next 10 years. They only need an internet connection and a laptop to be effective, and they can be anywhere. So that becomes an opportunity for us to rethink what work is and how we can make work for humans. And that's what we're doing.
And when it comes to kind of, I guess, Oyster, where you guys are going, what's your biggest challenges that you guys have right now?
Our biggest challenge is the macroeconomic conditions that the world has put itself into, because these central bank measures to increase interest rate are targeting employment. They want employment to soften, and we thrive when employment thrive. So that's going to be a phase that we're going to go through, where we have to hunker down and make sure that we exit that phase a stronger, more resilient, and a better Oyster. That's a more efficient Oyster. That's what we're focused on right now.
But because you employ people in so many countries around the world, many of them would be most likely developing. Would that not mean that you guys would have really strong costs amongst the business, and would have a great balance sheet because you've raised $200 million? Like, wouldn't now be the time for you guys to double down?
Well, it depends how much the demand is going to fluctuate. So this is one of the unknowns of the future, right? I mean, it could be that the music is going to stop completely or not. Like, we don't know. So at the moment, we are very conservative, very prudent, because if we go and spend too much, grow too much on our headcounts, then we might end up to do some difficult decisions in the future. So we really want to be very prudent in weathering this phase of the world financial crisis, essentially, to enable us to own more of our destiny. Like, we don't want to be dependent on fundraising. So, you know, what needs to happen for us to get to a place of totally control of your own destiny? Now, if things become better than we expected, we can accelerate, right? So we reserve the right to accelerate when things changes. But for now, it is really about being prudent and conservative and really focus on what's going to make the business a better business.
Mm. Awesome. You talked about risk management, and I can see you're kind of practicing what you preach.
You talked about risk management and basically your internal framework around that and how you assess and manage risk across building businesses. Maybe even I want to talk to you about your investing in your portfolio as well. Any insights you could share around how you think about risk, how you manage it? You said oftentimes you're anticipating something that doesn't ever occur, but you're still anticipating. It sounds like you're quite paranoid, but in a great way.
Yes, good to hear that. There's being paranoid and in a great way in one sentence. Thank you for that. First, like, you don't want to depend on founder, you know, founder fear reaction to risk. I mean, that's not really what that works well. Maybe in very early days of a business, but very quickly as you scale and you get to a relatively sizable business, let's say over 5 billion of revenue, then you want to change how you see risk. You don't want to really go with the instinct of a founder who sees risks everywhere and who wants to do something about it. So you want to move into a more structured approach to measuring and making decisions based on risks, and you want to factor risk into your business. So we have in our decision-making frameworks, we look at various angles. One of them is risks. And part of the risk, there's a number of risks that happens in the business. There is regulatory risk, there's financial risk, there's reputational risk, there's margin risks. So there's a number of ways we look at risks, and each big decision that is cross-functional, that has been made in the business, that surfaced to the C-level in the company, will have a risk assessment and what it means to make that decision.
Got you. And how often are you assessing that risk or all the different risks?
So we have a compliance team that is really kind of on top of all, you know, monitoring all the risk in real time. Think about, you know, cybersecurity risks. So we have like real time monitoring about this kind of stuff. But from an executive team standpoint, it happens on a quarterly basis when we are in the planning process and deciding whether there is a new initiative you want to take. What are the risks of that initiative, and or you want to, you know, pull back from certain initiative? What is the risk of pulling back from that? So that happens on a quarterly basis. And from time to time, we have these decision moments where we have an important decision that we want to make as a cross-functional team. And then that also happens a couple of times a quarter when there's like significant, complex, cross-functional decision that needs to be made and it's surfaced to the executive team.
Got you. And you talk about cross-functional teamwork. What do you do within Oyster to encourage that? And to, avoid silos.
Yeah. So good question. So one technique that we've implemented successfully in the last few quarters was when we set our objective and key result, we make sure that the owners, there's multiple owners for each of these KR for multiple functions. So essentially, we get the team to own the same goal and work together towards that goal. And also as part of the planning process, we have that happens on a quarterly basis. We have intensify a cross-functional dependencies analysis. So essentially, before we commit to a goal, the team have looked at what are the cross-functional dependencies and how to address them. These are the two, I say, technique from a goal-setting standpoint that get the company to behave in a more collaborative way and reduce the amount of silos that are in the business.
Okay. So after you exited Nexmo, there was a merger, right, with a NASDAQ-listed company? That's correct?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, it was Vonage.
Vonage, yeah. Yep, that's right. So then you went on to start building an investment portfolio. I'm curious, what do you look for when you invest in companies or platforms?
Yeah, my angle is technology for impact. I believe that companies that use technology to change the world are going to be the biggest technology companies of tomorrow. And so I focus on that. A lot of it is in HR technology, to be honest, because technology that helps human do better their work, to change their lives is very impactful by design, but not limited to that. So we invest across the spectrum in early stage to late stage, but one of the main criteria is really what is the impact that this investment is going to make. And this is a broad areas of impact that we look at, environmental, societal, and so on and so forth.
Working towards wrapping up, conscious of your time, when it comes to, I guess, Oyster, where do you see you guys in the next 5 to 10 years from now?
I see Oyster becoming one of the largest, if not the largest employer in the world. You have Walmart that has the largest employer in the world that is not a government, is around 2 million of employees. So we want to get to that status of having becoming the largest employer of the world, but we want to do it in a way that delivers impact. You want to make sure that increasingly these employees under management on the Oyster platform, not only they have a fair and safe and delightful employment experience, but they also distribute it around the world, increasingly in emerging economies. We have a goal of remitting over $1 billion in funds every year from 2024. That's our goal. We are on track to reach that goal, because essentially, if you think about it, many emerging economies, they depend on fresh flow of currency. That's called foreign direct investment. These hard currencies that they depend on, and you see today in the world, there's many countries that are their currency is collapsing because the amount of flow coming into their country to support the need of the country in hard currencies, namely US dollar, is drying out over time. So what they depend on, the major source of that is actually the remittance, right? So is immigrant leaving their home countries, going to live in the West where they have economical opportunity and send back home 5 to 10% of their income. That's one of the biggest foreign direct investment in the world today. Imagine if people don't have to leave their home country, they can stay in their home country, they will be paid a salary that is above their market salary, sometimes a life-changing salary in many economies. And that money, it's not only 5% that is coming back home, these remittance, it's 100%. Because you're paying the full salary directly into that local economy. So this is how we see impact. We see impact is by seizing that opportunity to distribute work, we can elevate talent from certain countries to participate in that economy that we all participate in today, while staying home and while strengthening their local communities.
Yeah, wow, what an incredible vision. We're going to work towards the hot seat. This is rapid fire questions and answers. What's the most single important trait for entrepreneurs from your experience?
Resilience.
If you could go back to your first day in business and give yourself one piece of advice, what would it be and why?
Start Oyster 1 year earlier. And why? Because you know, we had a bit more time to prepare. You know, we were like, put right into the storm.
What's something you've learned today?
I learned how everything is connected. Like, from if you think about my background, where I started and where I am today, it all has that sort of connection, and the dots are connecting. So thank you for asking me this question and enabling me to make sense of it all.
You're welcome. And last question is, if you could have dinner with any entrepreneur, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Let's take a deceased one, Henry Ford. I'd like to understand how he was able to get consumers to pick one color and buy it. I want to understand how he was able to build a great business with less is more. That would be the question.
Love it. Well, Tony, thank you so much for your time. This was an incredible interview. I learned so much personally as well. And I look forward to watching from afar the Oyster journey, and I wish you nothing but success.
Thank you for having me.
Hey guys, I hope you enjoyed this interview. As you might already know, our mission at Founder is to help tens of millions of people every single week with our content, either start or grow their business. which is exactly why we're partnering with world-class founders such as Damon John, Alexa Von Tobel, Greta Van Riel, and so many more to teach crucial skills such as negotiation, finance, e-commerce, and so much more. So if you'd like to get access to these free exclusive trainings, please go to founder.com/free. These are 100%. We go super in depth on teaching a particular topic, and I know that you're going to love them if you enjoy this podcast. So just go to founder.com/free. All right, guys, I'll see you in the next episode.